found this in Ganner room. Ganner mirror at me.
What is it?
Oh, it's, it's
Sycophants.
Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Nequizahadarach Aaron O'Brien.
And we have special guests with us this week from Artful Gremlins.
That's right, you got Robbie Palmer.
Welcome, Robbie, to the world of Dune.
Robbie
Muad'Dib. My name is a killing word.
Oh, no.
I warned you, I'm going to be doing that all throughout this episode.
Is your name a killing word?
My name is a killing word.
When they...
Johnny!
When they call you, like, at work for something, you know, people just heads explode.
Hey, killing word.
They do, man.
Their
they
heads
do.
Explode.
The Fremen just follow right behind me. They're stabbing at stuff. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Wow. Wonderful.
Things are blowing up all over the place. People are screaming.
So just in case you haven't gotten the hint already, we're talking about David Lynch's take on Dune.
1984. Yes. We're dialing it back a couple of years. Dune is David Lynch's third big movie, and
it was his third, wasn't it?
Yeah. So
wasn't it his last big movie?
No.
I thought he said he wanted to step away from big movies.
This was the reason why. He did his first movie. I mean, he did a bunch of short movies that got recognized, but then he did Eraserhead, and then he got Elephant Man, and then he did Dune. So I mean, the jump from those two movies, Eraserhead and Elephant Man, which are pretty much small production per se. I mean, you know, a cast of actors, a little bit of makeup, and, you know, some film tricks. But Dune is like, you know.
It's going from independent films to the blockbusters.
Millions of dollars.
With like no transitionary time.
Right. So, yeah, so Dune, this is obviously based off the Frank Herbert's, you know, series of books, and now his son's taken over and has been doing books as well. Takes place.
Personally, I think they're phenomenal, his sons.
I have not read his sons. I've only read the three Dune novels, the first book, Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune. Those are as far as I've got.
I need to read them. Yeah. I have not done that.
Really interesting stuff.
They really are. You got God Emperor of Dune, Heretics of Dune. I don't think they're necessarily in that order, but...
Yeah. It's all pretty cool. And so a couple things about this movie, just before we dive into it, is that Dune obviously was... like I said, 1984 this came out. The book was written in 1965. There was rumblings of making this, developing this into a film before, and they had Jodorowsky, the famous Chilean director. He was going to make the film, and that fell apart. And then Ridley Scott was going to make the film, but then his older brother passed away. And he walked away from it, and then next he made Blade Runner right after that. So, Ridley Scott was like ready to make the movie. Like they were.
Can you imagine what that movie would have been too?
Oh, I mean, both those iterations.
The Jodorowsky one looks amazing. There's actually a documentary called Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yes, watch it.
Watch it. It's on iTunes. You can rent it for $3.99. I did that this evening, and like. I was blown away by like the concept of it, how cult leader-ish, like the.
Well, you think cult leader? I see a visionary.
But he definitely was a visionary. But just after listening to a lot of Last Podcasts on the Left and hearing how like that kind of stuff gets started, he's looking for spiritual leaders and all this. The way just his terminology on things was kind of weird.
Well, I want to dig into that later because I do want to touch on that at one point. But so we had two unsuccessful tries. The studios wanted to do, you know, obviously. Make Dune, and then they tap Lynch to do this. So, you know, Frank Herbert actually wrote the first version of the screenplay, but then David Lynch came back and he kind of made his own edits and his own version of it. The movie, unfortunately, was a huge box office failure. It made $30.9 million, and it was it took $40 million to make it. So yeah, it's about $10 million short.
Yeah, it didn't make its money back.
It did not make its money back. It totally crushed a whole bunch of film companies that were trying to produce this movie. They just got killed.
You know, it also killed David Lynch's spirits a little bit too, because it was originally pitched as a trilogy. Like, he was signed on for another two movies, and then everything just got pulled out from underneath him.
Yeah, it basically just because this movie was just not a success whatsoever. I think there's for so many reasons. I think the movie's the book material is very difficult to iterate into a movie.
It is.
And on top of that, we have it's so foreign to a lot of what we think of as today, especially today, as sci-fi. Even back in 1984, it was pretty foreign. So
I think the problem is, to a point, sometimes studios meddle too much.
Oh, of course. And David Lynch says that's exactly what happened. He said that he didn't get the final say on the cut. He got, they were trying, they chinched out on budget. So that's why sometimes the effects look so terrible in certain areas, because they just did not give him money for the budget to do it. And he was just running out of money. So,
yeah, it's a very interesting movie. And I read on the wiki for it that there was originally 4 hours of movie before any visual effects were added.
Right.
And the final product was just under 2 hours. Mm-hmm. The final actual cut with all the visual effects added in. So, that's a huge cut. And I've seen this movie before in the past, but recently I rewatched it. It's been a couple of weeks, so I may be a little bit rusty, but I just felt like when I was watching the movie, there was some drastic just cuts to things.
Well, and here's an interesting...
lots of time passing with no explanation.
But here's the thing is, I think what you might be recalling, if you have seen, especially when you're younger, in 1988, they released it as a television version with the television cut. Lynch refused to put his name on it. Now, this has extended scenes in it, and this is the one I grew up on. I actually taped it whenever it was, 1989 or whenever I saw it, 88. I don't remember when I saw it. And I rewatched this, forever. So now when I see the actual cut, it seems short to me, and I see, there's gaps in scenes.
It does seem really short, under 2 hours. I thought it was a long movie.
Yes, there's a television cut. That's probably what you're used to seeing, and it probably was aired, USA or something
TNT,
like that.
TNT, something like that.
Yeah, TNT, and that's the one you saw.
Yeah.
Yes, that's probably one you saw. And there are extended scenes that tell the story a lot more. There's a lot more information. But again, Lynch didn't like the original cut. They did not give him the permission to do the ending cut of it,
or a director's cut later.
Exactly, yeah. And he refuses to touch it anymore. He's done with it. This thing's dead to him. So,
you know what? That's such a shame, too, because David Lynch is an absolute visionary. I mean, people can say what they want. The guy is clearly out of his mind. Mm-hmm. And, Mulholland Drive is proof that sometimes he makes craziness for the sake of making craziness.
Well, Inland Empire, to me, is unwatchable. I love Lynch.
I would agree with that, too.
I cannot watch Inland Empire. I'm like, what the fuck is going on in this movie?
I completely agree, but I'm a Twin Peaks truther.
You know me, too.
By Eraserhead. I know you're actually coming on Nerdynomicon when Twin Peaks comes back this spring.
This spring.
But, by the way, Twin Peaks this spring, hells yes. But it's such a tragedy that they won't, that David Lynch won't go back and, do a director's cut for this movie, because there is true genius here, and then there's a lot of stuff in this movie where it only makes sense if you're high.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Yeah, it's a dream. It's almost like you're in a dream state sometimes watching this
movie. It is. It's very bizarre. Right. I even like how they did the internal monologue. It's weird as hell. But
I love it.
But it's it makes so much better. I just some movies and books, I'm just how are you going to make this without the internal dialogue? Because, half of the book is the internal dialogue of the characters.
Yeah, a lot of times you get these books and there's the character's narrative or just an overall narrative to everything. So
Game of Thrones has actually done that surprisingly well, cutting out, getting the point across without having the characters in a dialogue. Because I read the books and they were amazing. The show's good, but they did a good job converting it without having to do the their monologue.
I think anytime you take any kind of literature and you try to convert it, it's always going to fall short. And very few times do the film or the TV iteration surpass the book,
Now, David, you actually brought up a very good point there, bringing up Game of Thrones, because Dune is the movie, definitely, but the story of Dune, you know, even the original novel by Frank Herbert, it's extremely important to both sci-fi and fantasy, because you don't get to Game of Thrones without going through Dune first. I mean, yeah, the way they set up the feudal houses and everything between Harkonnen and Atreides, there are clear parallels here between, like, Starks and Lannisters, or, you know, adding in the Baratheons, the Targaryens, and the whole broad scheme of things. You know, the Pelishan Empire clearly could be seen as the Targaryens, mm-hmm. to a degree.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get to Game of Thrones without going through Dune first. You don't get to a lot of stuff that we love as far as intellectual property without starting there.
Well, I want to even get into, like, the impact on film, not just what Lynch did, of course, but the iterations before, because
right.
which we'll get into over. But let's just real quick on this. I don't want to go get into deep, but quick plot summary for anybody who doesn't know what Dune is about, if you're just completely, a novice to this. So Dune takes place like 10,000 years in the future.
The year 10,002 or whatever it was at the beginning of the movie, it said.
Mankind is obviously in the stars. What happened was there was the robots took over and enslaved humanity. Humanity rebelled against the robots. They won. And they
swore. So the Matrix happened.
Yeah, the Matrix happened. Mm. And then they swore off, AI in using robotics, or intelligence robotics for that. So you will not see a high technology. You do see technology in the movie, but it's not like you see in Star Wars, Star Trek, or anything.
Nothing autonomous.
Yeah, you won't see any droids or anything like that. So the Empire, the universe is run by the Emperor Shaddam IV, he is in control of this special substance called the melange or spice, which is only comes from the one place is from planet Arrakis, which is called Dune. It's a giant
sand dune.
Yeah, it's a giant desert planet. There are gigantic worms, the sizes of, I don't know. And they're enormous.
Like miles, like a mile-long worm.
Yeah. And they
450 meters was the largest recorded one, according to the David Lynch movie.
Okay. Well, there you go. 450
meters. Oh. I watched that movie twice this week in preparation for the episode.
I watched it like 3 weeks ago. I had borrowed it from Aaron, so I'm a little bit rusty.
But and then we have on top of that, so there's different houses. And there's a space guild, which basically control the navigation. With the use of the spice, they can fold space. These are like humanoids that have been warped by the spice, and they use their reasoning capacity and
human supercomputers.
Yeah, by learning how to fold space. It's not really spelled out clearly, but it's just kind of how it is.
They're human, hyperdrive computers, like from Star Wars.
Yeah,
yeah, calculate basically.
Human. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. There's the father of the hero of the story is Duke Leto Atreides. He has his own house, and you're kind of following the story of these, like we were saying, these houses or these royal bloodlines.
Because it'll like cut from like one house to another house. It is kind of Game of Thronesy when you look at it from a filmatic standpoint, too, where it's like, right. Here's this house, here's this house, here's the king.
Yeah, the planets are controlled by the high houses of that planet. Like, House Atreides is in control of this planet, House Harkonnen of this planet. Mm-hmm.
The planet, the Harkonnen planet reminds me of, like, the inside of a Borg sphere, a Borg cube.
Yeah, a little bit.
Even down to the special effects.
It's actually a little more horrific than a Borg cube.
It is more horrific than a Borg cube. No weird rapiness happens on Borg cubes.
Yeah. Like I said, Leto Atreides, and they're suspected him of building an empire or an army with the sonic based weapons called the Weirding Modules. And they're like a voice activation that makes your voice into an actual weapon that can blow the shit up.
It's like the force at the force with just words.
Right. So the Space Guild, obviously, they see through time and space. And they know Duke Leto's Atreides has a son, Paul Atreides. They want to kill him. They don't know why, but anyways, the Emperor has a plan to give Leto Atreides the access to Dune, planet Arrakis, to mine the spice, but then he's going to double-cross them using the Harkonnens to kill them. So they go to planet Arrakis. Paul is introduced to the hero of the story. Paul Atreides is introduced to the Fremen, and the whole spice mining process, and the whole he gets kind of his eyes woke. He's kind of woken up by being in this new environment because he was kind of like.
He naturally sort of sees into the future even before he came to Arrakis. He's mm-hmm. kind of like a prodigy child because he's like the illegitimate Bene Gesserit male child that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, so the Bene Gesserits are basically like nuns in space, which have some mental ability enhanced by the spice, and they keep on breeding they're trying to breed this idea of the Kwisatz-Haderach.
Like a messiah.
This is a superhuman being. And the idea is that they're only supposed to breed women. They can control, obviously, with the sex that comes out. And the wife, or the concubine, I'm sorry, of Leto Atreides was a former Bene Gesserit, and she gives birth to a son, which is not allowed.
That's a no-no. So was the Messiah supposed to be a woman, or...?
No, it was supposed to be a guy, but it's supposed to be at their time and choosing, because the Bene Gesserits want to control the superhuman, the Jesus Christ of it. But unfortunately, Paul Atreides comes along, and he very well could be the superhuman that they're looking for, so...
He's got,
but they can't control him because he's not under the Bene Gesserit's control.
He's a duke's son. He can do what he wants.
I do what I want. mm-hmm.
Like getting in fights with Patrick Stewart. Yay, a Star Trek reference.
And we do get Patrick Stewart a couple years before he starts Next Generation,
which is wild because I guess the guy who pitched Star Trek to him knew that Dune was an utter failure because the way he pitched Dune to Patrick Stewart was like, if you do this one episode, if you just do the pilot, more people will know your name than ever have ever known your name before. Like that's kind of how he was kind of appealing to Patrick Stewart a little bit.
Right. Well, with that in mind. They do get double-crossed. The Harkonnens come to planet Arrakis. They take over. They double-cross them. Paul Atreides with his mother escape during the invasion. They get found by the Fremen. They get taken in by the Fremen and protected. And at this point, they basically learn. They organized together to fight the Harkonnens, but also he starts teaching them how to use the weirding modules, mass producing them and training their armies to fight the Harkonnens. And he does this guerrilla warfare on planet Arrakis against the Harkonnens there.
To control the thing means you can control everything. that thing once, right?
And that being said, he goes on, you know, they go on this huge warfare. Paul ends up taking the water of life. Thank you. It's like the water of the worm, basically. They take the spice out of the worm with water.
It's pee.
It's more than it's like bile or something in the worm. I'm not quite sure what exactly it is, but
only women can do it. Men always die.
Yes. And he takes it. He gets this spiritual awakening. Basically, what happens, he remembers all his ancestral memories from everything and all the Bene Gesserit's memories from before. So he has all this background knowledge for everything. Mm-hmm. So he becomes this hyper-aware human being.
He also gains direct control over the worms.
He does control the worms. And then the Emperor comes down to help the Harkonnens to kick the Fremen's ass. But unfortunately, they're no match for Paul Atreides.
And his one-year-old sister.
Yeah, Aaliyah is born with the same idea, same powers. So, and that's kind of the movie in a nutshell. It's a great movie for 1980s romp in the sand sci-fi style. So
it's truly bizarre. It's not an amazing movie, but it's worth watching at least once because it's weird and strange and it's good and not good
it's
all at the same
so
time.
It's so bad that it's good and it's also so good that it's bad. You know, I on one hand, it leaves out, mostly due to time, you know, but it leaves out so much story that's in the original Dune.
Right. There's things that just can't get into.
Right. And the problem is they tried to do so much with the source material, and being someone that's read that book numerous times because I love it so much, there's so much that he tried to shovel in that I think even David Lynch might have forgotten, hey, I didn't put A and B in here, so C doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I mean, he shot 4 hours.
That's one of the glaring problems in this movie, in my opinion.
I think it just was the studio cuts, because he had 4 hours. They said he had 4 hours of footage. So, I mean, like, I think those things were probably shot. They just cut it.
Well, that being said, but most movies have, you know, if it's a two-hour movie, usually they have, like, 4 hours of footage. They just, a lot of it gets cut, or it's not usable for the story.
Well, sure, there's, like, a two-hour cut of the chase scene in episode 3 between the General Grievous circle speeder and that dumb weird-noised lizard thing.
Well, that being said, a couple things just to bring out about this, I felt that this is my defense of Dune, number one. I think Dune, like, when you watch Star Wars, it's meant to, like, comfort and entertain you.
Right.
Where you watch, you know, Dune, you're kind of like, you're trying to, like, it's trying to give you, like, this idea that maybe your mind's not ready for. And you're trying to, it's like when you get into an argument and maybe you're not ready for that argument, and then you walk away and maybe you realize that maybe you were wrong in that argument. And it challenges you and makes you think harder about things than I think you're supposed to. I'm not saying this movie accomplishes it completely, but I think
it was trying to do kind of.
It definitely tried, and I don't think that it failed on every level. Please don't think that. I mean, again, I love David Lynch. I think that this movie is actually quite good. I mean, there's glaring points of Lynchdom in there, but I think this movie is quite good.
I think he jumped into the deep end and didn't know quite how to swim. I mean, it's like It really was. He got given this huge movie, and he was, like, the boss of this gigantic production where he was only doing these small productions before.
So right.
I don't think he was ready for that. And he even says, you know, I shouldn't have taken this movie on. It was too big for me, you know. He said he learned a lot from it.
Sure, yeah.
Now, source material-wise, there was another version of Dune, the original story of Dune, that came out on Sci-Fi Channel as a miniseries.
Yes.
And I think, personally, as far as source material, that version was far, far, far superior. However, especially in the aesthetic, the way the eyes of the Fremen are shown in the movie, I think that with the aesthetic and a lot of the acting, I think that David Lynch's version takes the cake. I mean, all the way down to the Sardaukar War, terror troops, mm-hmm. which is the Emperor's private guard.
Right.
In the sci-fi movie, there are dudes that dress in black with giant poofy hats. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like they're sending an army of Chef Boyardee after you. In the David Lynch version, they're legitimately notorious looking.
Yeah.
I mean, they look like what you would assume a group called terror troops look like. I can't praise them enough for that.
Also, the stilt suits in David Lynch's version looked like they were functioning. They could be functioning suits. And in the 2000 miniseries, they looked like they were wearing just camo, like, raincoats. Like,
absolutely.
It was so bad.
I guess the stilt suits were incredibly uncomfortable to wear.
Oh, yeah. A black and in your crazy hot conditions. That must have been horrible.
Rubber suits.
But it looked good.
They looked great.
It looked amazing. Exactly.
And even Patrick Stewart said that it, as bad as it was, he looked amazing in it. He loved putting it on because it looked cool. But, like, I mean, they would have to start filming super early in the morning because they were out in the desert.
Yeah.
Because people just couldn't handle it. And people were literally passing out from the heat. They just couldn't handle it. It's interesting just to you listen to the interviews, how uncomfortable everybody was in those stilt suits.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's like, you know, every time they interview Batman, oh, it's the most uncomfortable suit anyone has ever played Batman. It's the most uncomfortable suit I've ever worn, but man, it looks cool. But
right.
But the thing is, like, half the cast had to wear this thing. So it's like, oh, just everyone having to suffer like that.
Well, and that being said, too, as we bring up Star Wars, that David Lynch turned down Return of the Jedi to do Dune. So
yes.
That's I alternate universe, like what?
I so want to see David Lynch version of Return of the Jedi. I heard he turned it down. Turned down Return of the Jedi was because he told George Lucas this would be my movie, not yours.
Oh, absolutely.
And George Lucas was like, yeah, no.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's talk string theory for a second. In a parallel universe, David Lynch made Return of the Jedi and Ridley Scott made Dune. Imagine that universe, dude.
And Blade Runner was not made by anybody or made by somebody else.
Or made by somebody else who would follow it up sooner than 35 years.
Yeah, it doesn't really need to be followed up. But anyways,
I know. Or they're not going to follow it up, maybe. I don't know.
In the same location, because they were doing in down in Mexico, they filmed majority of everything down in Mexico. Right next door to that location, they were filming Conan the Destroyer. And Arnold Schwarzenegger and a lot of the actors and stuff like that would all hang out after the movies.
That's really awesome.
They go and hang out with everybody. So.
Yeah, you're Paul Atreides, yeah. I never read your book.
What's interesting, yeah, too, is... I am the quiz ahead of rack.
I'm high on spice.
He probably was. Steroids.
Get to the sandworm. Want to see my sandworm?
Kyle MacLachlan, this was his first role. Like, he came from...
He was unknown.
He was completely unknown. Like, he was doing small theaters and stuff like that up in, like, Seattle area, I believe.
Yeah.
And he heard that they were casting. I guess he had read the book Dune. He did like it. And he heard he was casting, so he, you know, decided he was just throw his hat in the ring. And he got, you know, he got the part. So it was pretty bizarre. And he's technically older than the book he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be...
like 14 or 15 in the book?
Yeah, 15 years old. He's supposed to be pretty pretty young. So, I mean, obviously...
He's supposed to be like Robb Stark. Again, Game of Thrones reference.
But he's, you know, obviously in his 20s at this. But and Sting, too, who plays Faye, is obviously in his... he might be even in his 30s at this point. I'm not quite sure how old Sting was in 19.
Good God, Sting.
Well, and here's the thing. Worth it for all of your audience to watch this movie just to see Sting with red hair in a diaper.
But Robbie, you want to hear something
even
more interesting?
He's greased up like a butterball turkey.
He was literally supposed to do that scene naked. And he agreed to do it naked. And the studios flipped their shit. They said, no, we can't have him naked. And he was going to do it. So they threw that diaper on him.
Here's the Depends. We can't have your wang hanging out.
You know, you making it might have saved that scene because all he seems to do in the majority of the scenes that he's on camera is stand there with a menacing,
yeah,
crazy smile on his face. I mean, dude, you fucking got Sting in your movie. Well, Sting.
It's a funny thing about Sting is that nobody. I mean, here we are. How many years forward from this? You know, like 30 some years. This, I mean, Synchronicity had just like come out. Like, you know, you have, you know, King of Pain, Every Breath You Take. I mean, these one of the Police's biggest album, period, you know. And, and then the Police were going to break up and Sting was going to do his own solo thing, which he had his own success. But it's hard to even imagine. Sting was a gigantic rock star. Like, not just a little rock star. He was
he was massive.
Yeah. I mean, he was just like, and he was punk, he was sexy, he was talented.
Totally willing to do Mr. Harkonnen.
Extremely literate. I mean, all these things. So, I mean, it's hard to, like, get into the brain and think, like, go back to 1984 and seeing Sting, you know.
In a movie. In the sci-fi movies, big, and it's like they don't really use
Sting was in a couple other movies beforehand, but I mean, because he was in Quadrophenia with The Who and stuff like that. But like and I think Quadrophenia happened before he got famous. I mean, for being in The Police, but I mean, it was a pretty big deal. Like Sting in a movie was like that was the shit, you know. And if you you know, if you have four or five albums from The Police. All those albums are pretty damn solid. There's not a bad album. So, I mean, you can buy any of those albums and you will not be disappointed by their music. So it's like they're good songs. So
For sure.
Now, his later work gets kind of drops off more and more as the years pass on. So, as most solo artists will do. But
oh, Desert Rose. Oh, Desert Rose.
Yeah, that was a weird jump.
Sadly, that came out in my formative years. I think it was like 13 when it dropped. I loved it when I was 13. I look back now and I want to bitch slap 13-year-old me. Like, why were you singing this?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, it was cool at the time. Have some Arab guy singing. That was different. Nobody did that. Yeah, so we had Sting, obviously. We put out before, Ridley Scott was making the movie before. Now, we should kind of get into Jodorowsky's version of Dune just for a second.
Oh, this is the most bonkers thing.
So here's this guy.
I can't really talk to, so I'll let you guys do that one.
Listen to this, because is this going to blow your mind? This is probably the coolest thing. So this is back in the early 1970s. This is before Star Wars, okay? Star Wars isn't even like a thing yet.
Yeah. Okay.
The Chilean director who has done these really avant-garde, edgy films, like
but totally bizarre.
Yeah, they're not normal, but they get these.
You're still describing David Lynch.
Yeah, he's like the David Lynch, but even like in this crazy 60s, 70s. Think like crazy 60s, 70s style, but it's out there. Okay.
Okay.
So he, this producer comes to him and says, "I want to make a movie with you. What do you want to do?" He says, "I want to make Dune." Unfortunately, he's never read Dune. He just heard from somebody that Dune was a really good book. So,
okay.
He gets, this is where it gets really interesting. He does read Dune, and he, you know, still wants to do it. He gets one of my big time huge heroes in comic book artist, Mobius. He's a French artist. He died like a couple of years back. But he is just genius. I mean, genius on the highest level for a comic book artist.
Beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Unbelievable. He gets him to do the storyboards. They break down the script. They write everything out.
Like 3,000 storyboards.
Yes. It's enormous. And he's like, I can't believe how good this guy is. He's drawing these things so well. And he's
fast,
and he's capturing everything. This is, I mean, Mobius is unbelievable. So if you have not checked out Mobius, just check out Mobius comic book art. He is unbelievable. Anyways, he does things for him. Gets the story started. There he also goes to a whole bunch of other people. He gathers these people. And what were you saying? He was looking for spiritual warriors.
Spiritual warriors. That's the way he was, like, you know, pitching this.
He was not looking for, because he did go to the guy who did 2001 Space Odyssey.
And he was too much of a prima donna.
He was prima donna, but he was very technical too. And he was like, "You're not spiritual. You're very technical." And he wasn't diminishing anything he was doing. He says, "But I can't work with you."
But he also, like, the guy was just hard to work with.
Right.
Like, they had to call him like 40 times. He wouldn't return calls and stuff like that.
Right.
Although the next guy he went to, he brought him some special marijuana and like talked into him, like looking at him really intensely, snapped his fingers, and the guy had this crazy trip.
Yeah, Dan O'Bannon, which I think he went and did Alien with Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so he got Dan O'Bannon on there, and he just told him, "You're moving to me to Paris." And he was like living in like Los Angeles, or I don't know where he was living, but he was like, "You're moving."
Yeah, they had this castle, and they were bringing all these people in just to live there and work on this thing.
He gets a sci-fi artist, Chris Foss, beautiful illustrations of spaceships and everything like that. So they're doing all this production art, like figuring out how everyone's going to look. And then he's casting, too. He gets to play the emperor. He gets Salvador Dali to play the emperor.
Yes.
Orson Welles to play Baron Harkonnen.
No.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's perfect.
It's unbelievable. And the people, it's just unbelievable. He gets all these huge talents.
David Carradine to play
Duke Leto.
Duke Leto, yeah.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yes. So he goes on. When he's talking to Dali, he goes to Dali and goes, you know, he's trying to get, you know, like, seduce him to come to play the movie.
He says the word seduce.
Yes.
It's not a joke.
He's trying to seduce him, and Dolly's crazy, of course. He wants like $7 million to play the part. And he's like, yeah, okay, $7 million. He says, I want a helicopter. He says, okay, you can have a helicopter. He goes, I want a burning giraffe. He goes, okay, we'll have a burning giraffe. So anyways, all that being said, while he's talking to him, he's showing him art and he's showing a catalog, and he shows him the catalog of Geiger, who, if you don't know who Geiger is, he basically designed the aliens creature and the whole motif of aliens. This Geiger is unknown.
I mean, you think of Xenomorphs, it was because of Geiger.
Yeah. He was nice. Unknown. He went to Geiger, wherever he's in Germany or wherever he is. You know, he goes to travel and he says, you've got to design the Harkonnen's world. And he's like, okay. You know, he gets him aboard. So Geiger's doing all these crazy designs for him for doing the Harkonnen's world. He gets to do the soundtrack. For the Atreides, he's going to have Pink Floyd.
Bizarre.
He gets amazing. Pink Floyd to do the soundtrack for the Atreides. And then he gets this band. It's a French band. I have no idea who they are, but they were big at the time, called Magma. And they were like this kind of like militant-sounding band back in the like 1970s, 60s. And they're going to do the songs for the Harkonnens. So the most crazy thing... They get the whole thing figured out.
The documentary has so much great art in it, some really cool stuff. This you've got to watch. If you're a fan of Dune, even slightly, this is an amazing
watch. If you're a fan of movies, you will like this. Anyways.
Dude, I didn't even know they made this.
They didn't. That's the thing. This is a documentary about a movie that never came out with all these people in it.
The documentary. Oh, yeah. I didn't know they made the documentary.
So they get everything together, and he goes to the studios, and he pitches it to Paramount, he pitches it to like Disney, he pitches it all these places, and they're like, well, this is very interesting, but they're a little put off because it's very weird. Obviously, Dune is not normal, and he's like. And they're like, well, you know, they're trying to figure out, like, the logistics of it. And go, the movie might be 10 hours. And they're like, well, we can't make a 10-hour movie. And he's like, if it's 20 hours, it'll be 20 hours. It's movies however damn long it takes to make.
Yeah, he was very, like, he was very progressive for his time. He started off in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And he broke the rules of, you had to get permission to make movies from, like, the... like some kind of film guild out there. Like, he had to get permission to do art. And he's like, no, you don't need permission to do art. You just make art.
Well, all that being said, so everything from that movie did not get made, obviously. But all those people went off to their own things. Obviously, from Geiger, we got the Aliens movies, got the connections with O'Bannon with him. There were all sorts of things kind of like leaked out into all these different... parts of cinema, you know, we saw more and more everywhere. Like all these ideas got kind of like spread across our universe. And it's awesome when you see the documentary because you're like, wow, like if you didn't have this production of this movie, we wouldn't have all this. So it's great.
It's amazing all the stuff that came out of, around it. And one of the interesting things the documentary brought up was, like, what if this came out before Star Wars? What if this was, like, the cutting edge that inspired everything instead of Star Wars?
Right.
Like, you know, I want that, you know, alternate reality where David Lynch did Return of the Jedi. I want an alternate reality where this, you know, came out before Star Wars.
Well, and that's go ahead, Robbie.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, we can really see this now being 2017, you know, taking a look at what streaming services are right now, what premium television is right now. It's very clear and obvious that this guy was just decades ahead of his time. I mean, as soon as you guys said that he made that comment about that this movie is going to end up being 10 hours long, I've been saying this for years. Dune should be redone now, even after the sci-fi version, which I think handled the source material decently. It should go on as an HBO original series or a Showtime series, something like that.
I think Universal.
We've got, Yeah, Universal, they've got the budget to do it right. They've got the budget to do it well. They have the cable access can give it that edge that Dune truly does have. You know, you could have Sting naked if you want. Fair enough.
Not nowadays. I mean, HBO, nobody wants to see that now.
Well, HBO's known for its incest anyway. Mm-hmm. You've got so many other books to continue on with the seasons as well. I mean, Game of Thrones is going to be wrapping up in a couple of years. I mean, we got Westworld right in the bank, but dude, I would love to see Dune. Because again, you don't get to these shows without going through Dune, so I think Dune should really become a series. It's a phenomenal story.
Yeah. No, it is.
It's obvious that this guy was just way ahead of his time, because that's how he was thinking.
But the problem with him being way ahead of his time is that all those amazing casting choices are just undoable now.
And until you guys told me the casting that this guy had in mind, that was another thing I was going to say about the David Lynch version. Because overall, I do prefer the sci-fi, but David Lynch had so many things that were perfect, specifically Baron Harkonnen. Baron Harkonnen is gluttony made flesh.
Yeah.
And I thought that the casting for this character, the makeup, the entire aesthetic was perfect, including the scene where he's flying around in a circle for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Until you said Orson Welles, and then I was like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he is Baron Harkonnen. You know, it was perfect casting.
Right. And so, but here's the thing this is the part I'm worried about if it does get remade into current version. We're in this economy now where, or this world where everything's got to become like a franchise. Everything's got to be like make money on, you know, like the artistic reasoning and the spiritual reason. Dune is a spiritual orientated book. I mean, there is obviously political Machiavellian, you know, power blocks pushing each other around. Like you said, Game of Thrones, very much so. But deep down, we're talking about, you know, not just religion, because I think the religion, the Bene Gesserits, are the religious institution personified. Like, these are the rigid rules of the Bene Gesserits. You don't go against the Bene Gesserits. So that's the other side of it. It's like,
are you suggesting the Duke's son is an animal?
And the thing is, as Robbie would know, if you the Dune series books, like Paul wanders off into the desert to become, you know, because he is putting that mantle of godhood upon him. He goes off to wander off into the desert to be, because this is like the spiritual way. And it's, you know, it's not, he's not supposed, you know, like he just disappears.
Yeah, you mentioned the Bene Gesserit, which is completely accurate, but I mean, as far as the religious connotation, take a look at the Fremen. I mean, Muad'Dib, that line in the movie, "My name is a killing word," I mean, yeah, I use that to make fun of it all the time because I love the way that line is read, but the way that that line is intended is, oh shit, my name is a killing word, that these people now see me and revere me as a deity. So, I mean, a good parallel in, you know, our world would be, you know, I do this for Allah, I do this for Muhammad, I do this in the name of Jesus. I mean, the Fremen go off literally, it's worded this way in the books, on a jihad, on an intergalactic jihad.
And they tear down the whole universe. They kill millions or billions of people.
In Paul Muad'Dib's name, and that's what that line means, my name is a killing word. In the movie, Kyle MacLachlan says it in such a weird way, like, my name is a killing word. I will smite my enemies. No, that's not what that name, what that line is supposed to be representing. It's, oh my God, my name is a killing word. They will scream my name going into battle. My name literally is synonymous with death now.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because Muad'Dib in Arabic is meaning a teacher or to make literature.
And in the Fremen word, it means sand mouse.
Yeah,
it's he's the sand mouse teacher of death.
And then with the Quetzalcoatl is a Hebrew term, I guess, which means someone who can teleport between two places, or basically someone who jumps ahead in the path or shortens the way.
Interesting.
So
I did not know that. Well, and that also works in, you know, the mythology of Dune as well. You know, just looking at the navigators and the
players. Absolutely. I mean, obviously Frank Herbert was steeped deep in in different cultures. I mean, he says he's a huge follower of the Jungian philosophies. He obviously covers tons of things for, you know, religion and politics. And there's a whole thing we're not even talking about here. I mean, we're talking about the spiritual level, but politically, I mean, we have Dune. I mean, come on. You couldn't get a better analogy of today with either going back to the, you know, World War One, like Lawrence of Arabia time, where we have the British colonialism over the Middle East, and even today, how we have, you know, how we are, you know, the oil that we are constantly lusting after for, you know, the Saudi Arabia and, you know, all the Middle East countries that produce oil, and how we...
The spice must flow.
The spice must flow. So, I mean, there's like, there's huge, like, meanings in there, too, we can just dive into. I mean, there's like, you can really just, like, deconstruct the whole thing. And it's weird because nowadays... This is the other thing, is if they make this movie nowadays, I don't know how it's going to be told, because the Fremen are jihadists. Yeah. They're terrorists. Yes,
they become jihadists, yeah. I mean, Aaron, you started going down there. I just want to bring this back here for just a second. I'm not going to get political or anything like that. If you guys want to hear me get political, you can listen to Couldn't Be Models. We do a lot of that there. But, I mean, take a look at the worldscape as well. Specifically, poison is huge in Dune. Assassinations are huge in Dune. Even take a look at what's going on over in Russia.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People, this one guy just... got poisoned with a tiny bit of uranium. Stuff like that happens in the world of Dune all the time. Look at the attempt on Paul Muad'Dib's life with the what is the name of that poison dart? The
Hunter Seeker.
The Hunter Seeker. Yeah.
Whatever. There probably was a more technical name, but I don't remember what it was.
I think that I called it the Hunter Seeker.
In the movie, it is called a Hunter Seeker, and there is the thing called the Hunter Seeker, but I thought that the poison dart was called something with the name Jabbar at the end.
You probably.
Gum Jabbar? Just like the needle she held at his neck?
Yes, yes.
I remember your Gum Jabbar.
That's the one. But I mean, even just looking at the political landscape with that, with the assassinations that we're even seeing now. I mean, Kim Jong-un's
brother.
Half-brother.
Yeah.
You know, just assassinated with the poison over the face and stuff.
Yeah, they threw the poison in the face and just died in 10 minutes.
Right. It's insane. I mean, I'm not going to get political or anything like that. I'm just saying, look at the parallels even now. I mean, this book was written in the 60s, you know, and you're seeing so much of these as far as great titans in superpowers in the world, you know, just vying for control of nuclear arms, of oil, like you said. I mean, there's so many parallels. This story is still relevant today.
Absolutely.
Well, I thought Universal Pictures got the rights to either make a movie or a series out of it.
I just think that it's...
They did.
Because I've been reading about that, too, that they're seeing things about Dune.
I really hope they do a TV show versus a movie, because there's too much of Dune to be done in a movie.
Yes, there's way too much story. That's why I prefer the sci-fi version, is because I love the story of it, the plot of it. I'll deal with Chef Boyardee hats if you give me more of the story. You know what I mean?
But I
really want that marriage between the two.
But here's my thing is, like, are we going to divorce the true meanings of it for just an action-adventure movie? Like, watch Flash Gordon instead.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
What I want is, you know, you want that meaning to be there in Dune. Like, my dream pick for, like, a producer or writer for the new Dune series would be Ronald D. Moore. He's, you know, he did Star Trek Next Generation Season 3 to Season 7, and then DS9 from, I think, Season 3 also to Season 7. Like, he did a lot of their Klingon storylines. He gets really deep. I think he's a really deep writer, and he also did the Battlestar Galactica, which also is rife with religion and things like that. So I think if anyone is the guy who's going to do the new Dune, as far as, like, you know, being in the creative, I think he should be that person.
Right.
I can get down to that. I can get behind it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, Dune has this, like, you know, obviously... The technology is advanced, but it's not the important thing of Dune. It's more of, you know, the subjugation of people and the control of power.
Right.
That's the most important parts of it. But, you know, I'm more worried about, because I just see over and over again. I mean, and I'm not going to bag on the JJ stuff, but it's just like, you know, but, you know, JJ's taken over Star Trek. You know, as the stories, I mean, he did fine, but it just, it seemed to lose something in the meaning.
It's just it's mostly just action now. I
think he made it accessible to new people coming in, but sure. he definitely alienated the diehards like you guys. You know, myself, I've always liked Star Trek, but I've never been huge into Star Trek. JJ gave me that barrier to entry, and then becoming friends with you guys, I haven't watched this much Star Trek since I was a child, and I've told you that numerous times.
Yeah, yeah.
And you guys, this show has really made a lot of it more accessible to me.
Well, thank you.
So, and I mean that. I've told you guys that numerous times, and I do mean that.
I really appreciate
it. I definitely see what you're saying about JJ. I mean, he makes it accessible for the newbies, but not so much for the diehards. And being a diehard of Dune, that would make me terrified.
It's just that, and I've said this over and over and over again on this on our podcast, is that my sci-fi, I want to have the hidden subtext and everything.
Yeah.
Because I want that as a message somehow. Like, I want a story underneath the story, and that's every good science fiction to me has a subtext to everything.
Ooh, homeboy that did Fifth Element. Who was that guy? Because I like him.
Oh God, I don't remember.
Whoever he is, he's doing the new Valerian movie.
Yeah.
Oh, is he?
I like him.
He's from the director of Fifth Element, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, he is. I just don't remember his name off the top of my head. I like him. I would be down for something from him.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. You mean him to do Dune?
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
I like the aesthetic of Fifth Element. I like what I'm seeing of Valerian. I may not have cared for the comics that much because as soon as I heard about it, I went out and grabbed them. Mm. Meh, they're okay, but the movie looks great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, as far as storytelling goes, I think Ron Moore is really good with that storytelling aspect of religion. Because, I mean, religion was a big part of Deep Space Nine. It was a big part of Battlestar Galactica. So I think he can write sensitively like that and you know, bring in. And because of his Star Trek, you know, past workings, you know, he knows how to, like, weave in, you know, current events with stories and, you know, to put a deeper meaning other than just what you're seeing on the face value.
Right. Well, I guess all that being said, going back to Lynch's film. Dave, like, you saw the movie. Obviously, it's probably been a couple of years since you've seen it. When you watched it, like, what was your thoughts after walking away from it?
The first time I saw it?
No. I'm talking, like, you know.
Oh, recently?
Yeah, whatever, 2 weeks ago.
I just felt like there was giant holes in the movie. Like, I know there's, like, some narration points that, like, that sort of fill in some of the gaps a little bit. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning narration, I thought was beautiful. It was surreal. That woman's face, that close-up, the stars behind her.
Yeah.
I thought that was, like, weird, and it worked.
Mostly the visual side, I think this movie works visually for the most part, besides a couple effects and stuff like that, I think, because, like I said, he got chintzed out on the production side. But
let's be honest, some of it's just also dated, too.
Like the
suits that they have, the force field suits when they're doing the knife battles.
Yeah. Those were awesome.
I
just thinking, like, that's kind of good special effects for back then.
It is, but I mean,
it's weird as hell. Like, they're like giant cubes that move. Yeah. I thought that was hilarious.
But that was, like, probably one of the first times we saw, like, a computer effects on something like
that.
I don't know.
It was cool. It was bizarre. I liked it a lot. And especially that it was Patrick Stewart. I wish Patrick Stewart had more time in this film because he was absolutely great. I loved him as Gurney. One of the other things that kind of stood off in my head was that the Atreides ships, they have, like, that pill shape.
Mm-hmm.
They remind me a lot of the droid landing ships in Episode One. Like, just you enter them from the middle point, and then they get those wide things that stick out to the edges. It's not the exact same shape, but it's a similar design. I'm like, I wonder if George Lucas stole that and just kind of, like, sleeked it up a little bit. Because they're not very sleek.
No, they're kind of clunky.
But they're kind of cool looking. I love the giant tube they all have to fly in to get the face spooled around.
Right.
I think it's just such a really cool dynamics. It's got some really good ideas. I'm just sad that the studio said no to a 3.5-hour version of this film. Because it needs it. Because I just feel like there's just massive chunks of the movie missing. That's how I kind of left that feeling. I was like, I just feel like I'm missing something.
Yeah, right. Robbie, you said you watched it twice. Like, what
I did.
What, like, you after you watching it and, like, taking it in and, you know, digesting it, what was your thoughts after seeing this movie?
All right. After watching it the first time, I was met with equal parts, what the fuck did I just see? And that was a really good movie. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much equal parts. After watching it the second time, and I watched it the second time because my wife really wanted to watch it, because both of our idols, Kevin Smith and She Loves Mark Bernard, and they talk about that on the show Fat Man on Batman all the time. And she felt the exact same way that I did. And after watching it the second time, all I could think about was, good God, he flipped the table. Because at the end of Dune, spoiler alert for a over 30-year-old movie, it rains on Arrakis.
Right.
And all I could think of is, wow, all the rumors had to be true with what they said about David Lynch, because it rains on Arrakis. He flipped the table. Just, you guys want to fuck with me? I'm not making it anymore. It's going to rain on Arrakis, bitch. He just flips the table. And that was my only reaction after watching it the second time. I thought that visually, this movie was great. There was a lot of David Lynch-esque moments. You know, like I said before, Fade standing there in a diaper looking maniacal for no reason. Baron flying around in a circle for absolutely no reason. My name is a killing word. You know, just randomly said. Everybody seems to have a love affair with Duncan Idaho, which makes me very uncomfortable.
But Duncan Idaho comes
too happy.
But Duncan Idaho comes back in the next movie or next book, so...
Oh, yeah, as the Gora or the Golem of him, or whatever the word is.
Poor Duncan.
But this version of Duncan, every time he comes on screen, he just has a very serene smile, and everybody's just way too excited to see him. You gotta wonder what's going on behind the scenes at House of Trade.
He's a man whore.
He must be. Maybe. He must be, like, super cool to hang out with.
He's gotta be, like, give the best back rubs in the world, man.
Ooh.
Yeah, his penis.
That's what that look was. His back rubs.
Let me see your sandworm.
Oh yeah. So Aaron, like this is
John
the movie. Like when we started talking about doing, non Star Trek episodes once a month. This is what you pitched. So what about you?
Yeah,
I was introduced to this whenever it was in the late 80s. This is obviously. I did see the TV cut. I didn't see the Lynch cut, not the Lynch cut, but the cut that was originally released in theaters.
The studio cut.
Yeah. So I saw like a more extended version, but it was obviously had commercials and stuff like that I taped with it. But that all being said, I did not read the book until a couple of years later because I was just young, didn't know anything. But this movie did everything for me. It opened my mind to whole sorts of different ways of telling stories. I didn't know who Lynch was. Lynch was like I was too young to understand who Lynch was. I never saw Eraserhead. I never saw Elephant Man at that time. For good. I'm glad I did not, too.
You'd be scarred for life.
Eraserhead is amazing.
Oh, Eraserhead is amazing, but you shouldn't see it when you're, 12 years old, It's just...
No, you should not. You shouldn't see that movie when you're 22 years old.
Yeah. That being said, it just sparked my imagination to anything's possible. And that's... I grew up, obviously with Star Wars and, Star Trek as well. And those things were like, institutions by that time for me. And I still appreciate them, but this was so different and it's so left field. And Lynch too, on top of that, his direction, like you were saying, it's like this, like you're watching like a dream of a movie. You're not watching an actual movie.
It's so surreal. There's nothing
in the best possible way too.
Yeah.
There's nothing quite like watching Dune.
Yeah. You do feel like you're having a dream while you're watching this movie. Like you saw the movie and that you went to sleep and you dreamt about the movie. And that's what the movie was. So that being said, it just sparked my imagination. And the more I read the book, I read the three books. I know there's more books, but I read those. And I've watched the movie multiple times since then. And I see depths and depths and depths that are like scratched at. And you just want to know what's festering under that, wound or that boil somewhere. You're like, what's under there? What I want to know.
We're talking about Dune. You said Boyle. Did you have to bring up the Baron's face again?
Yeah, the Baron's face, yeah.
Again.
You're so beautiful, Baron. I love treating your puppiness.
Well, and it's a weird that, I just go on a strange like a, you know, a segue here, just to say that this movie was also hated with a lot of, you know, gay activists, because they felt like the Baron. Because the book, they kind of allude to it, and you get this kind of allusion to when he pulls a heart plug of that young boy, that he's homosexual, and he, you know, he lusts after young people, and his face is all covered in, like, these boils. So he's like, this is during 80s, with AIDS scare was a real thing. It was very, very serious at the time. A lot of people were dying. So a lot of people said this movie is anti-gay. I don't know if that was really the message behind it, but maybe that's how it read after seeing the movie. So
I don't know. I'm not a huge vast of knowledge for movies that are that old and older.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, I can't think of any other movies personally that, you know, have like very obviously gay people in them from that long ago. So I mean in a way, wouldn't that be sort of progressive? Is I mean, people, you said people are slamming it.
The issue is issue with Dave is that it you're portraying a gay person as not in a good light.
Oh,
you're portraying him as this disgusting, awful,
but
evil.
Sting looked like he was pretty gay, and he was really pretty.
Yes, that's true. But he was evil too. So
again, I think this also has to come down with like timing and stuff like that. You know, what's going on in society.
Sure.
But I never necessarily read the Baron as quote unquote gay. I always read him as, like I said earlier, gluttony made flesh. I just viewed him as a man of carnal appetites.
Absolutely.
He eats himself to overindulgences. He obviously has an overindulgence for pleasures of the flesh. And I always read that as, it doesn't matter if it's male, woman, wildebeest, it doesn't matter. If it gets his jollies off, that's what he's going after, because he is a glutton, and all he thinks about is fulfilling his desires. That's the whole reason that he wants control of Arrakis. That's the whole reason why he wants to destroy House Atreides. I mean, that's been a blood feud that's been going on for many, many, many generations, but he's consumed with it. You know, I never necessarily saw him as just gay, just always gluttonous. But maybe that's just me.
I don't know if he was technically written as gay, but it was just definitely there was an outcry within, you know, the gay community. Whatever.
I saw the implication there. I saw the homoerotic vibe. I just didn't perceive it as just gay.
Because
maybe that's also times.
Because he, you know, he lusts after Sting Face character. He pulls that heart plug on the the gay little
kid that comes out
right
with the flowers and stuff like that. So I mean, there's definitely this, you know,
vibe.
Yeah, you get this vibe from it,
and that you don't see any female Harkonnens or anyone from that planet at all who's a female at all.
No, you don't.
That's true.
Really. Yeah,
that's true.
But so this movie just sparked my imagination beyond anything I've seen at that time, and it just was one of those things that, you know, you didn't see anything quite like that. And it was, you know, everything else, I mean, besides, you know, like I said, Star Trek, Star Wars, any other sci-fi out there often was a little corny, you know, like it didn't have like, you know, like you had stuff like, I mean, obviously you had like the ETs and, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which are, you know, phenomenal movies, but they're like kind of one-shot stories that are kind of based on home. You don't get that space opera look,
yeah,
that big scope of the universe. I mean, you know, you had The Last Starfighter and stuff like that, which was just like, you go back and you watch this, they're not good movies. You know, they're
come
entertaining.
On, I love The Last Starfighter.
They're entertaining, but, you know, come on, it's like.
But this movie is almost modern in a way.
Oh,
like,
man,
like a lot of, like, you know, the DC films are getting, you know, panned as being joyless, you know, having no humor in them whatsoever. And, like, this movie, Dune, has no humor. It's very just,
there's
like,
no jokes.
Straight to the point.
Right.
As much as it can be, like, just for telling a story, and there's nothing funny about it.
Right. And, like, when you had, like, The Lord of the Rings, you had, like, you know, Frodo's going to Mount Doom, but he's got a
bunch of goofballs around him.
Yeah, he's got Samwise with him. He's got
Pippin and Merry.
Yeah.
You got the dwarf. Yeah, and you get the dwarf elf, you know, weird camaraderie.
Gimli.
Yeah, yeah. Gimli. But I mean, you get like these, like, you know, little humor spots here and there, so it takes away
right.
the gravity of the situation once in a while. Well, I mean, you still
Tolkien,
get it.
Tolkien also wrote with a lot of wit, like he's like riddles and songs like that. So there's a lot of mirth, even though there's a lot of crap happening in the books. He knows there's some mirth in it too.
Right. I guess I think you're exactly right. There's no humor in this movie. There's no jokes. You don't even get like a Han Solo type of character to make you go like, you know.
Aha. Except for maybe Duncan.
Oh, Duncan.
Duncan,
Idaho. Chiseled piece of man. Seriously, they're way too happy for Duncan to walk into the room.
And this has, you know, like, it almost has like a King Arthur kind of feel to it a little bit. You know, the sword from the stone and, like, you know, like a leader will emerge. But you find out the interesting...
Sleeper awakens.
The sleeper must awaken, right. You get the interesting thing when you... hear or you read about Frank Herbert, what he was thinking about with Dune was the idea that, you know, Paul Atreides, Muad'Dib, he, no matter how good he starts off as, is that, you know, no leader is perfect, and he will lead people astray because of his imperfections or his little offbeat thoughts or ideas might really throw things off and hurt people in the end. And that's where the books take you as time goes on. And, you know, he regrets that the jihad has taken so many lives, you know, and he can't stop it. It's unstoppable at some point. So he sees that as like...
He rose a tsunami and he can't deal with it.
And you know, I think he's right. And he's like, you can't trust in leaders. And he said the more... And I think he said something like, the more charismatic the leader, in more, you know, followers they have, the more damage they'll do. So, you know, I think that's important, you know, is that, yes, we all, you know, look to a certain type of leadership, but don't think that they're not human. I mean, we talked about that, an episode or two ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no matter who they are, if it's Obama or Trump, you know, they're just humans. They share the same DNA as us.
Yeah.
They're, you know, yes, maybe they have different experiences and different walks of life and more ambition and certain maybe than we do, but they'll make the same dumb mistakes as anybody else. So, you know, yeah. I think that's what Herbert was trying to do. I mean, you have Paul Atreides being the superhuman, but... He's
not perfect.
Yeah, he's not perfect. He's
definitely flawed. You know, and as your main character should be, there should be some sort of flaw in your character to make him relatable.
Yeah. So this definitely. movie did so many things for me that I don't think any other movie that it just hit me at the right age. I love, you know, obviously Star Trek. I love space stories. And I love, you know, this other worlds that you can go and explore. And this was just so fascinating to me at a young age, whatever I was, 13 years old, 12 years old. So, and it's always stuck with me. You know, this movie, I think, is just a beautiful movie. I love this movie. I know the movie has failings, period. I think by the end of the movie, when he takes, you know, on the Emperor and his troops, the movie completely falls apart. You know, it just does not, it's not good, but it just, there's so much visually, there's so much backstories. And like I said, there's all these little, like, interesting, you know, ideas that you just touch on, but you don't really get to delve deep. I mean, you read the books, you get more into it, but so that's where I'm coming from for this movie.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do if they make a movie or a TV show. I'm personally hoping for a TV show, although I'm sure I'll see the movie. I'll see the movie if it does come to being a movie, but I just don't think you can do Dune justice in a movie.
You can't do Dune justice in under 4 hours. I mean, it's just not possible. There's way too much there.
And they should break it up.
Agreed. And, you know, I'm really am with you on pretty much everything you said, Aaron. I mean, this movie had so much heart behind it. It had so much attention, you know, into the small details. You know, everything from the wardrobe to the aesthetic of the hair, you know, it was on point. Yeah, the movie had failings. It had continuity errors. He flipped the table with it raining on Arrakis. This is a really, really, really good movie, and it's a cult classic, if nothing else. I mean, this is one of those movies that is mandatory viewing, especially for a sci-fi fan.
Yeah, you should see it. If you haven't seen it, you know, definitely, you know, look it up.
It's a barrier to entry movie. more than anything.
Yeah, and you know, you might watch it and be like, eh, didn't do anything for me. But it's like, at least you see something that's totally different. Like,
right.
You're never going to see a movie like this again.
It may not do anything for you, but and it probably won't, because it truly isn't like great. And like Robbie said, it's like so good it's bad, it's so bad it's good. So you might, it depends on where you fall on it, you may not get anything out of it. But there's nothing quite like Dune. Like, it's hard to describe. It's just very different.
Right.
Can I tell you guys a quick personal story?
Sure.
Most definitely.
So, as a lot of the listeners to either of my shows may know, my wife and I had a child last year. As a matter of fact, his birthday is coming up.
Yay!
Next month.
Happy birthday.
So, yeah, happy early birthday, Max. He's going to be 1 year old.
And you won't be able to listen to this till he's 21, right?
Yeah, most likely. Most definitely. Well, this one he can listen to when he's 13, all right? My shows, no. Much older than that. Much older than that. Any show where I sit there and call people cock gobblers, God damn it, I did it on this show too. All right, 18 for this show too.
Yes.
Anyway, the story I wanted to tell is when he was born, you know, lots of times babies' eyes get very, very wide when they first come out of the womb. Then they go to, you know, kind of bunched up and looking like they're asleep all the time. My son has the deepest, bluest, most oceanic eyes that I have ever seen in my life.
He does.
Ever seen naturally done. And as soon as he came out and he's looking around and I held him for the first time, I have not slept in over 2 days because it was a very long, intensive labor for my wife. And as she's laying there with her C-section and everything, she wants to know how he is, how he's, is he pretty? Is he beautiful? Blah, 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 blah. So I'm sitting there counting the fingers, counting the toes. I'm giving her the whole rundown. Then I look right into his face and I said to her, and she hasn't seen Dune at this point. I looked at her and I said, oh my God, he has Fremen eyes. She's like, what? He has the deepest, most oceanic eyes, like I said, and they all but glowed light was hitting him.
He does have Fremen eyes.
Yeah, Dave, you've met my son.
Yeah.
He does have Fremen eyes, doesn't he?
I've held him a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has Fremen eyes.
Cool.
The only difference is they don't glow.
Oh, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a biological imperative that's not very likely.
No, unless you have some kind of cat thing going on.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean,
no, I just wanted to share that with your audience. I that was one of the first reactions that I had to holding my newborn son is, oh my God, he has the eyes of a Fremen.
That's
awesome.
Am
I out of Arrakis?
I'm on planet Arrakis.
Is there green outside? Okay, probably not.
Yeah, it's the babies often have like gray eyes. That's usually how it goes. So if he's got blue eyes, that's very unusual.
Oh yeah, and deep ones too.
Yeah.
Deep blue eyes.
I don't know
where he gets that from.
Huh?
He's gonna be a charmer.
Oh God, yeah, he is.
Or maybe
he doesn't get that from me.
Maybe he'll rule the universe. Control the spice. Controls the universe.
Is his name a killing name?
Not yet.
Follow the weirding way.
Well, I do thank everybody for, like, you know, coming along and on this journey with us. I have been wanting to talk about Dune for a long time. It's so off track for what Star Trek usually we talk about, because we talk about, you know, Star Trek's a little more on the logical, technical side. This is a little more on the spiritual, political side that we don't usually get into. And, you know, we have, like, you know, obviously we have different, like, the Duke's house is the Baron, so these are bloodlines. This is not, like, you know, Star Trek is very democratic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a different world, obviously, completely, but I still find it fascinating, and
Oh, God, yeah.
I just love everything about it. It's so interesting, so.
Yeah, it's
such a deep story. It just happens to have a sci-fi background, you know?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to do this, because I really wanted to start branching out into doing like at least one non-Trek thing a month, just to see if that'll help grow the audience. I hope you Trek fans are still listening to these episodes and not just tuning them out because it's not Star Trek anymore. I hope this is entertaining as well as our Star Trek episodes.
Yeah, should be fun.
And if you have any science fiction shows that you want to hear us talk about, like throw ideas at us up.
80s Flash Gordon. Someone request that, please.
Fifth Element.
Someone did request Flash Gordon.
No shit. Somebody did?
Shannon Stickle, I think. She requested Flash Gordon, I think.
Well, I guess we're going to have
that's a TV show, right?
Well, it might have been a TV show, but they made the movie back in the 80s, which, if you think this movie is bad, death to me.
Maybe it was a different... What's one of the older TV shows?
Buck Rogers?
I thought it was Buck Rogers. I think she requested
it. I don't know where we get our hands on the Buck Rogers from the 80s.
Yeah.
YouTube?
Maybe. I haven't looked it up in a long time. I used to watch it as a kid. I don't know. It really will not hold up.
One thing I want to do coming up is Ghost in the Shell, because the Scarlett Johansson redo's coming out at the end.
I just rewatched that one this week too. I needed a palate cleanser in between viewings of Dune, so I watched Ghost in the Shell in preparation.
So you needed a Japanese dose of weirdness to cleanse your American dose of weirdness.
Hells to the yeah! But I couldn't go full weirdness. I did not go Akira. I went Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah,
well, Akira's fun too.
Akira is fantastic. Akira is also a different breed of weird. There's nothing quite like Akira either.
No.
You guys should do an episode of Akira. Or I should do an episode on Akira and have both of you guys on my show.
Hey, that would be fun.
We'd love to.
All right.
But
Buck Rogers.
Yeah, I'm not sure where we get our hands on that. But yeah, if you guys have any other ideas for non-Star Trek things you'd like to hear us do our drunken musings about, you know, hit us up on on our Facebook group, or hit us up at syntholics@yahoo.com. All right, I got an email from Joe DePinto, and I know I said I probably wasn't going to read this episode, Joe, but everyone wants it, so we're doing it.
There you go.
He said hi.
Yeah, Joe.
He said hi. I just started listening to the podcast on my commute to work about a week ago, and your Syntholics podcast was the first I downloaded and listened to. I did a quick search for Star Trek and a few different shows listed. I think yours was third or so, and I remember thinking, clever name. The first episode I heard was episode 100, and I thought you guys were hilarious. I watched every episode of every series beside TOS. I'm slowly getting into those. Favorite being TNG, but Voyager, don't hate David, is a close second. I find myself really enjoying your banter and agreeing and disagreeing about certain issues. Like, clearly the Doctor is the best Doctor out of all the series, and Threshold was pretty bad. Anyway, I've listened to about 15 or so of your podcasts and enjoyed them all. My favorite being episode 52, Tinker Tenor, Dr. Spy Potato.
Oh, that's a great one.
Hilarious commentary. He said, hilarious commentary, and glad you reviewed my favorite episodes. I donated $10 through your website PayPal, which was the least I could do for the free podcast as entertaining as yours. Then again, I don't really have anything to compare your show to, since it's the only one I've listened to. Perhaps there are better Star Trek shows out there.
It probably is.
He's like, there might be other Star Trek shows out there, but ignorance is bliss, and I don't plan looking for others.
Aww.
Well, thank you.
Lastly, in one of your shows, we're talking about how people who watch Star Trek really embrace are deep down good people. I truly believe that, and I personally take this, a lot of what Star Trek has taught me, and use it in my life as an elected official. Nothing major. I'm just a city councilman for a small city in Washington, but some Star Trek ideals guide my thinking process. Okay. Keep up the good work, and perhaps you will review A Nightingale sometime in the future. A great episode about leadership and the burdens of command. Live long and prosper, Joe DePinto. P.S. Feel free to check out my political website at joedepinto.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Joe.
Right on, Jim.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad that, you know, there's somebody out there that has the Star Trek, you know, mantra in their mind as they make their decisions on daily life, especially in governance, you know, like...
Me too, and I've written them back a couple times, and I'll say it again, but, you know, I think world leaders, every time they get together and meet, Star Trek should be mandatory watching before they make any decisions and after any decisions have been made. Just as, like, you need...
You know, Joe's bringing up the Nightingale one. We should review that one.
Yeah, we need to do more Voyager. But we've done two really close in proximity.
Yeah, so. But we'll maybe in this next upcoming month we'll do that, because we should oblige him for that.
Didn't you say that this guy was out west as well?
Washington State.
Yeah, I find it really, really awesome that it's true, man. Geeks are inheriting the earth. I mean, this guy, you know, loving himself some Star Trek, and has he's an elected official in Washington State, and just recently an elected official in California took his oath of office while holding a Captain America shield. I think that that's absolutely awesome, and I want more of that in this world. Good on you, Joe.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for writing us in. Thank you so much for the donation. It means a lot to us. It helps help keep the lights on and then the show up on the internet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just wonderful that, you know, a couple of our episodes caught your fancy, the Tinker
the Tinker Tenor Dr. Spy Potato.
That was the
first episode we recorded after we lost our jobs. And
was it?
It was the first one recorded after the layoff, and so we got super drunk.
We were really
drunk. You guys were hammered on that episode.
We were far beyond any episode. That's, if you want to hear us as drunk as we've ever been, and you haven't listened to Tinker Tenor Dr.
That's
Spy
a fun
Potato,
episode. We had fun with that.
That was fun.
That was a good episode. I wasn't on it, but I did listen to it recently, as a matter of fact. And yeah, you guys were hella hammered, but it was a really good show.
Lots of potato jokes. Lots of potato jokes.
Forgot about that.
Talked about potatoes a lot.
It's weird because the episode's
a year old. I mean, it's practically a year old.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Because like the last episode was the anniversary of the getting laid off. Yeah. So the episode's a year and a week old.
Awesome. Well, jeez. I always feel that all shucks moment when somebody compliments us on something.
Oh, me too. And I don't know. I'm guessing you don't. You have an iPhone, and I love iPhones. But God bless you for not having an iPhone, because I just because he said he found us third. I went and looked up Synthaholics on iTunes, just looking it up, and it's not on the first couple pages. So God bless you for whatever app you're using that showed us third.
Interesting. Synthaholics. And it caught us. You know, there are other podcasts out there for sure.
There's a lot. There's a metric ton of Star Trek podcasts, and I've listened
to. Yeah, you guys are the best one.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're a little biased, though, Robbie.
Yeah. You know,
that
personally
doesn't mean I'm wrong.
that's fair. But there's some other Star Trek podcasts out there which are good, but I don't think any of them, like, are irreverent and silly like we are.
Everyone seems a little stiff.
Most of them are really, like, straight and to the point, and if they do joke around, they seem like they're inside jokes, and they're not really contextual to what's happening in the episode. They're more inside between the people doing the shows, and we try to keep everything contextual to what you're talking about so that it's funny.
Like, we don't really talk about a lot of personal things for our lives, because we don't think, you know, you guys really don't really give two craps about.
Episode 100, we got a little more personal, but we talk about personal things
here and there. I'm not saying we never do, but I'm just saying for the most part, we don't usually get too personal, just because it's like, we're mostly on the material that we're talking about, and that's what you're tuning in for. So awesome. Thank you so much for that letter.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate it. We always love reading stuff like this. And for everyone else who's listening right now, like, if you liked the last episode 100, like Joe did, like, send us more stuff. If we have enough content, we will do another episode
if
just like
If you
it.
Hear this episode and you hate Dune, you hate David Lynch, write us a letter.
If you hate that log that lady carries around in Twin Peaks.
Hey.
I love the log lady. She passed away
Respect
recently.
Respect the log lady. Exactly. Respect the log lady.
No, I'm not talking about the lady. I'm talking about the log.
Oh, the log.
If you hate the log the lady is carrying around.
The log has a lot of secrets.
Yeah. If you hate that log that lady is carrying around, you can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. We will read your email on said air.
And I think the theory is that that log has the soul of her dead husband in it.
That's wonderful.
It's a killing word. Muad'Dib.
That log is Muad'Dib.
It is. It's got the blue eyes and everything.
Right on, man. Right on.
Can I be called Log Muad'Dib?
You shall be known as Usul.
Which is the strength of the balls of the penis. That quote is not my comic genius, unfortunately. There's a web short out there called Dune Redub by Sequential Pictures.
That's great.
It is hilarious. I should have shared
that with me.
I sent it to you weeks ago.
I never got it.
I don't know. We'll watch it after we're done recording. But it is hilarious. It's like 10 minutes. The guy, or maybe not even 10 minutes. The one guy dubs over all the voices that you see in there. He puts in some like weird sound effects for the Harkonnen flying. It sounds like the Jetsons thing, flying thing. It's really funny. you should watch this. I would pay money for an entire version of Dune with this guy just dubbing all the voices for the entire film. This is pure genius. I'll put the link in the show notes for Dune redub. It's definitely worth a watch.
That's awesome. We should also put the...
Not me ready to watch it now.
We should also put some of the trailers and stuff like that for like the Dune.
Oh yeah, the what's his face's name's Dune. It's a weird name.
Jodorowsky's
Dune. Yeah, links in there. You can find it on iTunes to rent or buy. That's the only place I was able to find it. I looked on Stars. I looked on Netflix. I didn't see it. So iTunes is where I found it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch the shit out of that when we're done recording.
You're gonna love it. It's a beautiful.
I'm only halfway through it. And it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Super interesting.
I think it's pretty obvious I conveyed how much I love Dune. I cannot wait to watch this.
Yeah. I want to get back into reading again. I want to go dig out my old novels and read them.
I got to download the audiobooks and listen to them at work.
Yeah, they're really awesome. So much,
they really are.
So much to take in. You know, it's great. Great stuff.
Excellent stuff. Well, thank you, Joe, again for emailing us. It's fantastic to hear that you're enjoying the show, that you laugh at it, and that you're not going to look for any others. I'm glad. I hope we fill that void.
And that you're enforcing policies that are influenced by the Star Trek, you know, mantra and the thoughts behind it, the theories behind it. That's just wonderful.
That is truly inspiring. So
I have faith. And I don't have much faith.
I hope more politicians and more people who run in politics will take after you.
Yes, yes. Good show, sir. Good show.
So where can we all be found on Twitter? Let's start with you, Robbie, as you are our guest. Oh, and Joe, Robbie does two other podcasts, Couldn't Be Models and Nerdynomicon. So if you're looking for other content that's not Star Trek related, listening to him will not be cheating on us.
So, no, it's not going to be cheating. If you want your weekly dose of free funny, you can find us at Couldn't Be Models. And if you want just some irreverent, nerdy talk, again, usually weekly. We've been taking a little bit of a break now, but we're coming back actually this week as well. Nerdynomicon is our other podcast.
I hope you'll be on that one day.
You are going to be on that one day. I've got material for you for hours. Don't worry about that. You can find me at Twitter, at Artful Gremlins, and that's the same one for Instagram, Artful Gremlins.
Awesome.
All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find the show at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. On Twitter, we are Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I am David_J_Duncan.
I'm Blackbird2004.
Guy is GS Davis Art. How can they find us to listen to us?
Oh, man. Find us? You can find us behind a dumpster somewhere recording this episode. No, but you can find us
outside right now.
It's raining and cold in Buffalo, but we're doing this for you.
Home twice. There you are.
Yeah. No, but you can find you can. Why did I say that? You can find us.
You know, Robbie's gonna run with anything you say.
I know.
I'll shut up. I promise.
You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Google Play. You can find us at
Stitcher, iHeartRadio,
all sorts of different anywhere you basically get even
podcasts.
YouTube.
Joe, where did you find us? Yeah, our episodes are going up on YouTube. And if you ever were curious about how to make Klingon blood wine, I put up a video about making Klingon blood wine called "Cooking with You." So you should go watch that because it's silly fun. And the recipe is in the comments. So if you want to recreate the blood wine like I did, go check it out.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
You know, you never offered me any blood wine.
You didn't come over. I didn't drink it all. So you could specifically have some tonight. And we're doing it remote with you tonight.
Goddamn food poisoning.
Yeah, food poisoining. It's a killer.
I'll make it again one day. Josiah from the Geekiverse wants to try it too. And while I mentioned the Geekiverse, check them out at thegeekiverse.com and youtube.com/thegeekiverse.
Absolutely. Like we said, you know, email us, synthaholics@yahoo.com. Also, you know, if you are on iTunes, please rate and review us if you have a second. Throw us a couple stars, 5 stars preferably. Write us a review. This helps people get more notice so more people like Joe can hear us and know.
So if Joe had an iPhone and was using the iTunes app, he would have never found us because we don't have enough reviews and stars. So
there
please,
was a time we were.
Like a year ago when two years ago when Chatante was on, he gave us a couple reviews and some other people did at the same time, and that put us in the news and noteworthy section of iTunes. And we haven't been there pretty much since. So the more reviews and stars we get, it'll boost us up and more people will be able to find us.
Look, I know you love us. and we're sort of like your secret band, you know, nobody else. We're that underground band that nobody knows about. But sooner or later, that band's going to blow up. We need your help. We got to blow up. We got to get to those stadium acts sooner or later, you know. We can't be doing these small clubs forever.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to do live shows, tour around the live shows like some of the other podcasts. That would be amazing. We got to get big for that to happen, though.
But that being said, yeah, definitely rate and review us. Please tell a friend. If you know somebody who's into sci-fi, somebody who likes just stupid humor like we just do all the time, let us know. Let them know about us if they're into something that we might tickle their funny bone.
You can check out our Patreon if you want to donate that way. We're at patreon.com/thetholics.
Give us a couple bucks. You know, a buck. What's a buck?
A buck a month. That's all we ask for. If you think we're
less than a coffee,
good quality content. And Robbie, you also have a Patreon?
I do. Patreon.com/artfulgremlins. We've got a lot of cool stuff there as far as level perks, and you guys can get access to all of our shows as early as I can possibly pump them in there.
Awesome.
Also, Guy Davis, who isn't always with us, but he's always with us in spirit. He does the USS Tamerlan comic and Witches of Flames. He's an artist for a living. He does our podcasts when he can. He does the Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. And he also has a Patreon, patreon.com/GSDavisArt, if you want to support his art and all the things that he does on his side.
Absolutely. So, he's wonderful.
So thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for bearing with us on a non-Star Trek episode. I hope you enjoyed it.
I hope you go watch Dune. If you haven't seen Dune, just watch it. And just write us, shoot us a Twitter, shoot us an email. Say, why did you make me watch this awful movie? Or, this is a wonderful movie, and it is like watching a dream of a movie. Just please, you know, give it a chance.
Give it a chance.
Win, lose, or draw, the spice must flow. That's all I'm saying.
Most definitely. So, in closing, Muad'Dib, my name is a killing word.
There you go.
Live long and prosper, all my friends. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Acting's brilliant with Casey Affleck's in it, but, oh my God, what a heavy story. It's
really,
there's nothing, it's not like, it's not, you know, geek oriented. It's just a drama.
A drama.
But, oh my God.
Oh, he's got the kid or whatever. He's got to watch out for the kid.
Yeah. Right? His brother passes away. It's a premise and he gets custody of the kid, but there's a whole backstory with him, which is like,
there's another movie. That's something like a very similar premise, except for the kid's a prodigy.
Yeah. This kid's not a prodigy.
So, like, yeah, but I mean, it's a similar premise. Yes, yeah, so for that. Can't remember who's in it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Arrival last week. Oh, I thought that was phenomenal.
It was a great movie. Loved it.
I hear a lot of people saying they hate it. I'm like, what the fuck? What's wrong
How
with you?
The hell do you hate that movie? Just it's literally like a movie about how to talk to each other.
Yeah.
That movie is incredible.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty.
On so many levels.
Yeah, I thought so too. I couldn't understand why anybody. I understand sci-fi is not your thing. You know,
right.
Like,
but it's only...
It was barely sci-fi. The sci-fi even, was scenery. It was background story sci-fi.
Mm-hmm. I just loved the whole premise of it. I thought it was just wonderful. Wonderfully done.
Yeah, Hoshi, you need to study up on this stuff.
Hoshi.
I mean, give Amy Adams all the Oscars for that one. And Hawkeye, he's finally relevant again.
Yeah. Poor Jamie Rayner.
What's his name? Clint?
I know.
Oh, Jamie Rayner.
Is that his name? I'm thinking of his alter ego.
his other alter ego. The on again, off again, not really going to get with Scarlett Johansson in the Avengers because I have a wife and kids.
And because Scarlett Johansson seems to be fucking the Hulk.
How does that even work?
I don't even want to think about that.
I don't understand. It's like a St. Bernard fucking a chihuahua.
Yeah, pretty much. That doesn't make much sense.
It's like a blue whale.
So
no, it's like a blue whale fucking a chihuahua. Come on, let's do it. Let's
depending on how pissed off he is. Yes,
exactly. Well, it's just, I mean, in the Edward Norton Hulk, they said he couldn't have. He's like, he was trying to get with Liv Tyler, and he's like, well, my heart rate's getting up too much. I'll Hulk out if I don't want to pop you like a balloon.
That's interesting. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So he can't even get horny without hulking out, which is really weird. Really weird. God, that's gonna be horrible.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What a freaking!
He just spanks one out and he hulks out. halfway through,
the dick turns green.
Purple stuff shoots out.
In that case, he should never watch David Lynch's Dune.
Yes.
Period, point blank.
Oh, my God. Sandworm.
Right. Oh, maybe.
My name is a killing word.
Johnny.
Fair warning, I'm doing that all throughout the episode.
Please don't. Oh, man.
All right. So, let's get shotted.
Shotted.